Three Echoes, Western Desert Art. In the early 1970s, my father once told me of how when he was a child in Banjang country, people coming along the river or through the woods would coo-wee to announce their presence at certain places where the voice would echo repeatedly, reverberating into the distance, to which, of course, the receiver would chant-like respond. An echo is a sound caused when a noise is reflected off a surface, such as a cliff face, the bank of a river, a body of water, or a solid object, such as the walls of a space. If a sound echoes, it can be heard again and again after the original sound has stopped. Such a projected sound is used to calculate from the time taken for reflected reception how far away the receiving party is, and from the signal strength or distortion, possibly to identify the material the reflective body is made of, and whether the signal has had any effect on its receiving surface. I was told that an echo is a sentiment, a sensation, or a thought carried that brings back memories. Metaphorically as well as metaphonically, we can echo a thought, a sentiment, or a consciousness. In the first 2 years of the 1970s, the ceremonial elders living at Papunyatula, Aboriginal government settlement located northwest of Alice Springs, were inspired to transfer in scale and materials the creation stories of the land and the people. Formally, these are formally constructed as large coloured ground and fibre compositions, using lyrical poetics as mnemonic devices to relate the means and actions of creation and conception of the social mores of living in the world. At these times, the next generation is exposed to these repetitive chanting, performative rituals that then come to echo through all aspects of their lives forever after. Previously, an action that was restricted by gender and age, these new portal compositions are now, with various veils and aesthetic visual screens, projected physically, publicly into the world to await responses. Of course, it would take a decade for an echo to really return, indicating acknowledgement of a reading of this in some form. In 1978, Bernice Murphy, curator of foreign exhibitions for the Australian Gallery Directors Council, included a desert painting on canvas by Billy Stockman Japaljari and a bark painting by Remangini artist Charlie Jutta for an exhibition sent to Indonesia titled Landscape and Image. Three desert paintings by Papunya male artist Clifford Possum Japaljari and another with Clifford collaborating with his brother Tim Lura Japaljari, Napperby Dreaming, and a third larger collaboration painting by a larger group of Pintubi language artists, Tingari Cycle, all from the collection of the Aboriginal Arts Board, were included in Murphy's first Australian Perspecta 1981 exhibition for the Art Gallery of New South Wales. Then in 1982, a related group of male artists from La Germanu were included in William Wright's 1982 Biennale of Sydney, where they installed a sand and fibre composition. This return echo was slightly distorted. An insertion of Aboriginal art into the Western art canon was attacked within the contemporary art world by racist conservatives in Australian art, who could not accept these beautiful creations and thoughts as intellectual, emotional thoughts. They still viewed these artworks as primitive art. It had never been seen widely as art, but as a kind of craft practice or folk art, an ethnographic expression. Simple primitive objects created by simple primitive people, fairy tale people living in fairy tale places. An expression of an emotionally and intellectually underdeveloped human expression. The left view was of a similar bent with a different wrapping. How could we, modern Westerners, commodify these powerful spiritual conceptions and destroy these pure, simple people by giving them money? Some Aboriginal artists also had this view railed against the commercialization of a spiritual expression, a cosmology of man and the universe. This is a quote from one of the original Papunya artists, Johnny Warren Kalar, Jupurula. Save your pity for those who have no dreaming, that appeared in the front page of The Australian in 1997. There was also the beginning of the Western Desert dot and circle paintings on canvas movement at Papunya, northwest of Alice Springs, from the early 1970s. It was the time of the Whitlam government, the time of a kind of jingoism, a nationalism and a liberalisation in the arts and society. It was also the time of the Australian parody comic figure Bazza McKenzie, we must remember, created by Australian satirist Barry Humphries, and attitudes and government policies towards Aboriginal people that were still essentially assimilationist. I felt that the Australian population's feelings were, why wouldn't these Aborigines want to join? Why wouldn't they want to be part of Australian society, God's own country, after all? Although anthropologists and others had collected drawings on paper or cardboard and other flat surfaces for some time, these paintings and drawings persisted to be seen as curiosities and not as a strong social innovation or innovative art. By the end of the 1970s, the Aboriginal artists at Papunya were now working on large-scale, fine canvas compositions. Another discussion then arose around the question of what to name this art movement. Attempts were made to define the movement as pointillist, religious, spiritual, narrative, abstract, and then eventually falling back on modernist, but without really fitting the description suitably. Nothing was ever concluded, really. It's just art, mate, as such, in the great Australian tradition. As such, it is included in various major exhibitions, and although it pulled the rug out from under some notions of landscape painting and concepts of relationships to land and history in a Western sense. The form of acrylic paint on canvas and similar but different to popular pointillism of the late 1800s that had captured the imagination of the educated public made the artwork a very marketable product in a commercial sense. This development that's still really unfolding now and being played out now. The dot and circle painting movement became more widespread across the desert, exciting and popular in the market, and more importantly, I would suggest, developed into the most significant Australian art movement of the 20th century. All other movements have come to Australia from somewhere else. Several non-Aboriginal artists struggled then to find a middle ground, such as Immense Tillers, White Aborigines, 1983, and The Nine Shots in 1985, and Michael Nelson and Tim Johnson in their collaborations. The sound that came out from Papunya echoed not only in white Australian middle-class dinner parties and galleries, but also around campfires in the desert communities of Central Australia. As the Papunya movement had grown from the seed of a school teacher, Geoffrey Barden, the Yuendumu Echo, another Aboriginal community to the east of Papunya, was directed by an adult education project, an enabling translation to allow senior art practitioners to transmit across generations in a new form of instruction. The headmaster of the then bilingual school at Papunya commissioned local elders to paint major mural compositions onto the doors of the school, possibly a form of doors of perception, or perhaps the Gilberti Baptisti doors in Florence. At the time in 1984, Terry Smith of the left in the Sydney art scene, in the Sydney Morning Herald, called this the Renaissance in Aboriginal art. A second echo occurred of the three echoes when non-Aboriginal Australian artist Marina Strocki and a fellow artist, painter, partner, Wayne Eager, came to Haast Bluff, Ikunji, in August 1992 to hold painting workshops for Aboriginal women in the community and for those of nearby Papunya, those women from nearby Papunya, and at the invitation of the community to set up the Ikunji Art Centre. Both were practising artists from Melbourne, in Wayne's case influenced by the 1948 Cobra painting movement of Copenhagen, Brussels and Amsterdam. This post-World War II European painting movement refused to be defined as surreal, abstract, and other Western art definitions. It was an attempt to mentally and emotionally break free after the war and the occupation by the Nazis, an attempt to redefine themselves and their societies. This personal self-definition was embodied within, certainly within the Aboriginal painting movement, a freedom to self-express and self-define against the oppression of distance, the oppression of disempowerment of language, disempowerment of racism and colonisation, and certainly a lack of intellect on the part of their Western audiences. The third kui, another kui, was sent out to the wider world when Rodney Gooch carried out what he called the Summer Project over 1988-89, following the 1988 Utopia a picture story of 88 silk batiks from Utopia commissioned by the Holmes Court collection. This motivated the men and women of Utopia to move out of and away from any entrapment of working in a lesser Western art world designations of craft to that of painting that intensely echoed back, cracking the reflecting wall forever. The London Underground Tube map is really a schematic map in form of circles joined by lines. It was designed by Harry Beck in 1931. It now exists in various forms in many maps of many cities across the world. At the Heywood Gallery in London, at the Urrajurra Art of the First Australian Exhibition in 1994, touring Yuendamu senior artist Dolly Grenitz struggled with being peppered with questions from the very uninformed naive London press. What were these dots, circles, connected by wave lines and straight lines? To cut through this knot, I simply asked, could she sing to the painted subject? And she movingly complied to silence the room. They were stunned with the beauty of her song and the fact that you could see an audio expression within a visual art composition. The curious audience, I must say, could use the London Tube map of circles joined by lines to get to the Heywood Gallery, but seemingly couldn't accept that Aboriginal people could construct such a mental composition and concept. The third really foundational echo for this collection was the aforementioned signal call set out by Aboriginal activist Gary Foley and Charles Chicka Dixon, and European curators Bernard Luthi and Dr. Uri Krempel, who organised the only Aboriginal-led major touring exhibition of Aboriginal art, Urrajurra, the Art of the First Australians, to Europe in 1993-94, including within a significant number of desert paintings on canvas. This would tour to Dusseldorf in Germany, London, the Heywood Gallery in London, England, and the Louisiana Museum of Modern Art in Humlebæk outside of Copenhagen in Denmark. It was here that it would be heard and inspire and impress Karen Schuck and Andrew Arnott to begin their own collection to return the echo that we hear and see here.